Hey there, if you are ready to build your service-based business from scratch and ditch your 9-to-5, then I want you to head on over to shedidithowaypodcast.com/leap and download my free Ultimate Leap Checklist and Starter Kit. Again, you can head to shedidithowaypodcast.com/leap to download my Ultimate Leap Checklist and Starter Kit to get started on building your service-based business and ditching your 9-to-5. Welcome to the She Did It Her Way podcast, where it's all about making the ultimate leap from your 9-to-5 and building a business and life you love, all while doing it your way. I'm your host, Amanda Bolin. Let's get started. Hey friends, before we get into today's episode with the lovely Miss Nicole Lappin, I do want to make a disclaimer and let you know that if in case you haven't noticed, this episode is marked with an E for explicit. We do say some explicit words and just wanted to let you know that ahead of time in case you are around some children and maybe it might not be the best episode to listen around children, but wanted to let you know that and I can't wait for you guys to tune into today's episode with Nicole Lappin. Hello, my beautiful She Did It Her Way listeners. Welcome back to another episode of the She Did It Her Way podcast. Today, I am excited to welcome the lovely, most badass woman, Nicole Lappin, to the show. Nicole, welcome to She Did It Her Way.
Well, it takes a lovely, badass woman to know a lovely, badass woman.
Well, I love that. And you are just the epitome of She Did It Her Way. And so share with us, tell my listeners, if they're not familiar with who Ms. Nicole Lappin is, tell us in your own words who you are and what it is that you do.
I'm still figuring that out every day. A new adventure. I definitely didn't think ever I would be doing what I'm doing now. I wrote Rich Bitch. I think that's how you and I got introduced about 5 years ago. And then Boss Bitch came out 2 years after that. And now I have Becoming Superwoman, which is a simple 12-step plan to go from burnout to balance, because I actually experienced a severe burnout after about a 20-year nonstop career that started as a broadcast news anchor. I was a business news anchor for, it feels like a million and a half years. but since I was like 15, I was on the air. This is actually no joke. So I grew up in a super broken home. I'm first generation American. My father died of a drug overdose. We're just going to get into this, right?
Yeah, I love it. My listeners love it too. We're like, tell us everything. We want to know it.
I'm just getting naked right away. Like there's no foreplay.
Stripped out.
My father died of a drug overdose when I was 11. My mother sort of like wasn't much of one. And so I just started working really early and I needed a job, and I got an offer as a business reporter when I was 18 on the floor of the Chicago Merc, and I was so clueless about business and money. I knew nothing. And when they asked me if I did, I totally lied and faked it till I made it. And then fast forward, I got my dream job as a CNN anchor. I was 21. I moved to Atlanta. And then I became a CNBC anchor when I was 25, and then a Bloomberg anchor, I think I was 27. And that's right when I launched Rich Bitch, because I was tired of talking to old rich white men about money and how to get richer. And I wanted to talk to the audience that needs it most, which is you and everybody listening now.
And okay, so there's so much there that I want to unpack. And then you started out as like news anchor, and now today, like, what does a typical day in your life look like today?
Wow. I don't think there is a typical day. I definitely didn't think I would be an author. I thought I would check the box, write a book, and you know, all TV people do that. And so I would send it for Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever and call it a day. And I had no idea. I had super low expectations about it. I also thought, like, if you launch a book called Rich Bitch, it either is going to crush it or it's going to fail miserably. There's really no gray area. And thankfully it did the former. It hit the list right away. It sold out. Like it was this crazy thing that I definitely didn't expect to hit on. And it took me 10 years to get a book deal. So this wasn't a super easy situation. And I thought it would never happen for me. And when it did in a big way. And so I pivoted to, like, I popped out another book. I think of them as like birthing babies in some ways, sans epidural. And so the second one like came out basically in the equivalent of a cab on the way to the hospital. I couldn't even like comprehend what was happening. I became a second time author. And then after the book tour for Boss Bitch, I had a complete mental, physical, emotional breakdown. I had an emergency hospitalization to the psych ward, and I needed to rethink my entire life, and I needed to rethink everything because I had self-prescribed work for so many years, and I hid from so much trauma and so much other shit. Can I say shit here?
Yes, you can. Don't worry. We'll put a little E there for explicit.
Saucy. So that's what happened. I thought I was closed for business for books, and I realized I actually have a platform to be able to say, yeah, I'm a badass who preached badassery to other women, but I leaned in so hard to everything that I actually fell over. And if that was happening to me, I know it's happening to a lot of other women. And so when I went through that and needed to figure out how to become my own hero and killing the idea of Superwoman, the character of being it all and doing it all and being all things to all people so you're nothing to yourself, I went on this mission to become a super space woman, a woman who puts her oxygen mask on first before helping others. And it was something that I was totally unskilled in doing. And I then did studies that found women are on the verge of burnout or breakdown to like 80% levels, which is crazy town USA. That's not where I want to live. And yet what was interesting about the studies they did was that only about 50% of us felt like the pace at which we were going was unsustainable. And so we're feeling like we're on the verge of burnout or breakdown, and yet we think like nothing is wrong. And that, I think, is where the problem really is. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened to me. I wore this busy badge of honor for so many years and just tried to be breathless all the time. And I've now traded that in for a productive badge of honor. So that's a long-winded way of saying every day is a little bit different. I try my best to stick to a schedule that I talk about in my third book. I laid out basic, like down to, you know, the 15-minute mark. I created like just two times a day where I'm checking email and social media. I got an actual alarm clock so I didn't look at my phone for about an hour after I woke up or before I went to bed. I put all these like life hacks in place. So I could figure out how to actually work smarter, not harder, because we hear this shit all the time, like work smarter, not harder. Like, what does that mean? We don't learn this in school. Like, it's bananas. And we learn how to dissect a frog and the Pythagorean theorem, but we don't learn how to do our taxes and how to do a budget, which I talk about in Rich Bitch, or how to do a business plan, which I talk about in Boss Bitch, because I figured this out at the School of Hard Knocks. And we don't learn how to take care of ourselves or any sort of emotional wellness. And I realized through this entire thing that self-care is actually the biggest asset or liability in your career. When it's on point, it can bring you more success than you ever imagined. And when it's off, it can bring you to rock bottom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love to, like, it's, you know, looking at the books that you have birthed and written, and then you sharing your story, it like flows so well. It's kind of like, I'm a little jealous, because then when you look back on your life, you could be like, there's my memoir in each of these books and like the journey of it. Talk to us. I want to dive deeper and unpack the like point between, okay, your first book, you're working at Bloomberg, you're 27, you come out with Rich Bitch. And then how soon after did Boss Bitch release?
Yeah, so first of all, sister, do not be jealous of anything. And I actually wrote a memoir before any of these other books when I was at CNN, and I had to get out of that contract. It was the first book I sold, and it was one of the more devastating things that had happened to me. It was a quarter of a century memoir. So, you know, I thought that was going to be my first book, and shit happens and life happens. And yes, there will eventually be a memoir, and it will be a Lifetime movie likely. But after this book, I'm like,
watch it.
Definitely close for business. I'm tying my proverbial like book tubes, and you know, we're done. But who knows? I said that last time too. So, you know, Rich Bitch came out, and with the success of that, because I, you know, and I know this is so cliche, especially to everybody listening who's entrepreneurially minded, you know, this idea of disrupting finance books. But I felt like for the first time I wanted to swear in a personal finance book, which is like not a thing. Mm. And I wanted to reach an audience that would never imagine she picked up a money book, but picked it up because of some of that, because it was written in accessible language in the way that you and I would just talk about anything else. And so, you know, I don't come from Wall Street. I didn't work at a bank. I didn't get my MBA. Like, I didn't read the Wall Street Journal growing up. My dad didn't teach me about this stuff. Like, so I felt like I was coming into it trying to speak this language. And I just needed a Rosetta Stone. So I was like, oh my gosh, if I need this, so many other people do. And I felt like I had the platform to democratize this in a way that hadn't been done before. And that resonated because I was unapologetic about who I was talking to. And I alluded to the idea that I had sold a couple of other books and had false starts, and like, you know, one time I sold it before the holidays, and, you know, come January, the editor who bought it was fired, and like the book died, and it was called Making Bank, which is hilarious because looking back, it would have totally been dead on arrival in the same way as like if I had named something Five Steps to Financial Freedom or whatever, like it totally also would have gotten lost or dead on arrival. And, you know, that was trying to be all things to all people. And what I did with Rich Bitch was I was super laser focused on exactly who my audience is and exactly who she is. I know who she is. She's you, she's me. And the way that I spoke to her is not for everybody. And, you know, I use the word bitch in an empowering way, and some people still felt it was derogatory. But I knew that the person that this was for, my people, like, would get it. And I had been called a bitch in a derogatory way my entire life. And what that meant was that I was strong, ambitious, on top of my shit, on top of my career. Not only did I want a seat at the table, but I wanted a voice. And if that meant I was a bitch, then I'm a bitch. And I own that as a badge of honor, along with so many powerful kick-ass women who helped endorse and promote the book.
Yeah. And I love that, like, you know, the how you say that the way that you just knew who your target audience was for your book so well that it was almost like there's this, you know, polarizing effect. Like, it's either for you or it's not for you. And I think, including myself, sometimes like there's shyness to even go there because you don't want to turn other people off. And I just love how brave you are in the sense that you're like, look, this isn't for everyone. And the person that it is for is going to understand it and interpret it in one way. And I think that's just such a good lesson that myself and listeners that are tuning in can really take and like be unapologetic about who it is that we're speaking to, and also encourage us to know that person that we're speaking to so well and have that confidence. So, yeah, no, I love it. And then, so you have Rich Bitch, and then what, like how soon after did you say that you wrote Boss Bitch?
It came out 2 years later. So every 2 years I've had a book. So I guess I actually had proposals ready like the week of publication for Rich Bitch, because that's just who I am. And I thought, you know, the most momentum was going to be around the first couple of weeks, and it was. So I had sold it really quickly. I had written it really quickly. And it came out exactly 2 years later. So then two Marches later. And then this one was supposed to actually come out 2 Marches later, because I'm super like OCD that way. And, you know, I pushed back the publication date about 6 months because I felt like I was writing a book on balance, and I felt like I was relapsing again. And I felt like I had imposter syndrome, even though, you know, I thought I had gotten rid of that many years back. You know, you never totally get rid of it. You never totally become an expert in anything. And anyone who tells you they are, like, run the other way, because nobody is. Like, I've certainly learned a lot. I don't know everything. And I'm not some epitome of, like, balance and perfection and all of these things. Like, I have more good days than bad days, which I consider a win. Mm-hmm. But it didn't come out in March because, and I write about this in the epilogue, because I felt like I was hanging in balance, not being on top of what I was preaching. And you know what was so interesting is that I actually went back and read the book for myself. Like, this is not a joke. I'm not trying, this is not like some spin or a fake story or whatever. Like, I literally went to this place, Miraval, which I really love, off the grid, and I read every step for myself. And I was like, oh my God, this is really smart. Who wrote this? And I guess I was in a different mindset and I had felt cocky. I was like, yeah, I got on top of my balance game. Like, I did all my gratitude journals. I did all these retreats. I did like an outpatient psychiatric program. I did all of this stuff. I learned, I was like the valedictorian basically of the psych ward. And I just, you know, got cocky and I stopped practicing balance. And what I found is that you can use balance as a noun and a verb. But in this case, I use it as a verb because it's something that you constantly need to work on and you constantly need to be an active participant in. So I know that there was this old school commercial that I think it was like Hair Club for Men or something where he's like, not just am I the founder, but I'm also a customer or something like that. And that's exactly how I felt. And I went back and I did all the steps from the book and that's how I actually know it works. And so I'm a writer, of course, of this book and I had gone through a lot and tried to distill it in like a step-based plan in the way like my type A brain works, but I'm also going to be a lifelong reader of it. And I think that it's constantly something that you have to hone as a skill. It's not like you find balance. It's not like, oh, it's hiding under the couch. Like, I'm going to go find it. I'm going to go find time. Like, I don't even understand how people say that. Like, where the fuck is time? I don't know. Can you find balance? I don't know. Like, I think that you constantly have to regain the balance when you lose it, because inevitably we will. And I think that's where the skill is not in trying to be balanced all the time or be perfect all the time, but in realizing that it is a skill that you can keep working on, because masters in every aspect of life do, even, you know, the best in every field, and keep honing it and regaining it when you lose it.
Mm-hmm. I know. And you had said something earlier about, gosh, it was like how, 80% of women are stressed and then only 50% actually recognize that they're like hanging in the suspended state of stress. And I definitely have experienced that. And I have, some close friends that like are currently going through it and it's like opening their eyes to this whole other world on that's not the way that things need to be. And so for you, like, talk to us about that moment, you know, that you like checked yourself in or got like admitted into the, was it, you said it was a psychiatric ward or?
Yeah.
Yeah. What was the tipping point for you? And then share, if you wouldn't mind, sharing that with us and like, just kind of like paint a picture so that, you know, if someone's tuning in and they're like, oh my gosh, like I'm on this train and you know, if I don't change what I'm doing, then what does it look like? You know?
So just to clarify, it's not just stress. That wasn't part of the study. It was actually burnout, which as you know, has become an occupational condition, according to the World Health Organization, as of a couple of months ago. And so burnout is something totally different than just regular everyday stress or breakdown. Right. And so we all have stress. And actually what's interesting about stress is that stress is not inherently a bad thing in the way that we think about it. There is actually a term that we don't use very often, but it's called eustress, like E-U-S-T-R-E-S-S. Mm-hmm. And that's good stress versus distress. And so like if you are, I don't know, if you're not a Patriots fan, then maybe like you don't want Tom Brady to be stressed during a game. But like if you are, you don't want him to be chill during a game. He needs some stress to like win the game, right? And so we don't want to get rid of stress. I think that's like a misconception. You know, there's always going to be stress. Stress is a game of whack-a-mole. And I think it's about managing it and figuring out how to use it to your advantage. So that's just a quick point of clarification. And for me, you know, the stress morphed into something that was chronic. It wasn't like, you know, and one of the big telltale signs of knowing where there's that tipping point between stress and actual burnout, or which is a gateway to a lot of other things, depression, anxiety, and other you know, clinical diagnosis, which I found my own was PTSD, which I didn't even know was the thing that people who didn't go to war had. Like
I didn't know that.
Oh, really?
No.
Yeah, I have been, yes, diagnosed. And when I found this diagnosis, it made so much sense to me. And I actually, naming your problems, whether it's stress, whether it's an eating disorder, whether it's a breakup or relationship issue, whether it's any, you know, of these other things, I think obviously we're more than a label, but it's so much more helpful to look your problems in the eye and know what they are. And when you name them, you take away some of the power. And studies have shown as well, and I talk about this in Rich Bitch, that women who create a cohesive narrative for themselves and their lives are more likely to be successful. So when you can actually articulate what it is that is bothering you, you know, versus we've all been in this sort of breathless state of like, oh my God, it's just like everything hurts, like it's so blah, blah, blah. And when you're in that state, that's not an awesome state. But when you can say like, here's what happened, you know, I was stressed, I had a breakdown, I checked myself into the hospital, I was there, I realized that I was there because I needed to get better, like people do in a hospital. And I was there as the great equalizer, you know, like the subway or the flu. There were CEOs, there were homeless people, there were Broadway stars in there. And I had came to appreciate it as one of the worst and best places I've ever been in my life. And I don't think anything would have changed if I hadn't done that. And the tipping point for me, I say was not, and I say this in the book, was not a spontaneous combustion precipitated by a single event, but I truly believe it was a lifetime of smoldering embers that finally caught fire and incinerated everything in their path. And I know that's a little bit of a poetic way to say, basically, it was a combination of a lifetime of ignoring trauma and issues and problems, and it ultimately kicked my ass.
The way that you said that, I could just visualize like how even, you know, is there opportunity in my own life, or if listeners are tuning in, to like really take stake and be like, hey, is there anything that is, you know, wants to bubble up or wants to be released, and maybe I'm not acknowledging it or pushing it down and doing that sort of thing. So I really appreciate you like just being open, honest, and vulnerable and sharing that, because it's definitely something that I think a lot of us can relate to, and like, you know, always have this pressure of thinking that it like has to be a certain perfect way. And so I know one of your things is that like you have that have your cake and eat it too, and make mindful choices about how you spend your time. So like having it all is not the same as doing it all. If you can talk to us about that and maybe share some of the things, like I know you said you bought an alarm clock, which I'm like laughing because I'm thinking I haven't bought an alarm clock yet, but I've thought about it. I'm like, this is so funny because these tools that we had like years and decades ago were like, oh, let's replace it with our cell phone. And then we like loved our cell phone so much as an alarm. And now we're like, no, get the cell phone out of the bedroom, get it out and away from me. So I would just love for you to share some of those too.
Yeah, totally. You know, we don't have a calculator. We don't have a camera. Like our phone does all the things, and our phones used to serve us. But now it feels like we're serving our phones. And there are a lot of celebrities too, and CEOs who have gone to dumb phones versus smartphones, which I talk about in the book as well. You know, flip phones, like old school phones that literally like, call people. You know, the founder of Topshop, I spent some time with him a couple of years ago, and he literally, like, he has like an old school, I don't even know what it is, like Nokia or something. He stocked up on a bunch of them, and he's not constantly, you know, responding to email every second, and he's using it as an actual phone. So yeah, I talk in Becoming Superwoman about not only the alarm clock, but a bunch of old school tools that I had to go back and like seriously kick it old school. So the alarm clock, and then when I'm traveling, I use an iPod Touch, I think, so it doesn't have like phone capabilities. And so I use that. And then, you know, I actually realized that like your watch is not just a fashion statement. It can tell time, which is crazy. And so you don't have to keep checking your phone. You know, we actually check our phones 80 times a day, which is more than we do anything else during a day. Like we don't smile 80 times a day. We don't eat 80 times a day. We don't, you know, go to the bathroom many times a day. There's nothing else we do that many times a day, which, you know, for me, I needed like an intervention almost. And when I cut out, when I went through a digital detox, which again, I outlined the sort of boot camp that I went through, and then found sort of a healthier technology plan in the same way as you'd find an eating plan versus like a crash diet, because obviously you need technology. Technology is awesome. But it's a tool. It shouldn't run you. You should be in charge. And we become slaves to our phones and our devices. And so I went through this like detox and I felt actual withdrawal symptoms. And so, yeah, I got a notebook and now I carry a notebook. It's like my Linus blanket. I carry that around. You know, I have just tried to safeguard myself from myself in so many ways. And when I had gone through like this whole process of putting my phone in the other room and like not checking it and whatever, I got to a place where I was like, you know, I actually wasn't missing that much. And it just becomes this habit. And I was like, yeah, you know, am I gonna not be in touch with my friends or am I not gonna know what's happening in their lives? That's not awesome. And then I was like, you know what, if one of my best friends had a baby or whatever, like they would call me, they would know where to find me. I don't need to be bombarded and distracted by, you know, the feed of looking at my fifth grade teacher's daughter's, you know, cousin new car. Like that, for me, you know, we bemoan this work-life balance, which by the way, I think is also bullshit because they're like the idea of work-life balance makes me so upset because it's like, we're just balancing two exact things in 50-50 parts, which I don't think any superwomen have just two things that they're balancing. And so I came up with like this sort of Weight Watchers program for our balance, which we can talk about if you'd like. I also have a coming out for it, but I, you know, I looked at what that was like for me and what that picture of actually working, like we said, harder, not smarter, was just being online all the time and not actually accomplishing things. So when I got rid of that, I could actually laser focus on the things I did and do them so much more quickly. You know, we bemoan this idea of lack of balance, but we're actually not productive most of the day in accomplishing our tasks. So having your cake and eating it too, again, a long-winded way of telling, getting back to your original question, which of course I did not forget, but you know, it pisses me off too. Like I get very upset with a lot of conventional wisdom. I, at the end of each step of all of my books, I debunk conventional wisdom to help you think for yourself, because sometimes we just get in the habit of like, oh, we've always heard that. It's a cliche. So like, it must be true. Well, no. Did you actually stop to think like, if I buy a latte, am my financial freedom going to be taken away from me? No, the financial gods are not going to come down and beat you up because you bought a latte and saved to buy a house. Like that's, we've just been brainwashed to hear that. And so for the idea of having your cake and eating it too, like if you actually think about it, you can't, like literally, let's think about a piece of cake. So Amanda, we have like a piece
of cake. Could it be a chocolate cake?
Chocolate cake. I don't love chocolate cake, but we can have all the cake in front of us. We can be half vanilla for me and half chocolate for you.
Perfect.
We have a piece of cake. Then we eat the cake. Okay. So what, like, was that weird? No, that wasn't weird. What you actually can't do is eat your cake and then have it unless you barf, which is gross. And so we never actually stop to think about like what the fuck we're talking about when we say you can't have your cake and eat it too. Like, hello, you can have your cake and then eat it. You can't eat it and then have it. And so, you know, the idea of this, we're constantly told that we can't have all the things. No, we can't have all the things if you are comparing yourself to everybody else. But if you decide what having it all is and you hold yourself to that, you absolutely can have it all. But the problem is we don't actually define what it all means to us. And we're constantly changing the bar on ourselves. You know, I would always say, I'll be happy when I get there. Like, and then I got there. I'd be happy when I got, you know, to be an anchor on CNN. And then I got there. But then like almost immediately, I was like, I'll be happy when I get my own business show. And then I got that. And then I'd be happy when I get a first New York Times bestselling book. And then I got that. And then it was a second. And then it was never enough. And I never got my brain to the other side of happiness or balance or having it all. I kept changing the definition of myself. And so if you do that, you're destined to feel like a failure. But if you actually stick to what the definition of having all is, you are destined to win the game because you're writing the rules.
Yeah, I love it. It's such a good reminder too, because it like, it kind of all feeds a little bit into each other. Just like when you think about, you know, you see people on social media and then you think, okay, in order for me to be happy, then this is how I've got to behave. And then this is what it means to have it all. But then if you're constantly just chasing the next thing without sitting down, taking a moment, eliminating and all the distractions and saying like, what do I really want? And what is it, what is important to me? And what do I value? It's constantly chasing the next thing. And then, I've talked about this in a solo cast, but the Jim Fortin model of like the have do be, where so much we think that in order to be happy, we must first have something to then do something to then be something, where really it's like you have to choose, we have to choose in this moment to behave a certain way and be a certain way to vibrate and to almost like manifest and like bring that into our circle. Because if we, because I've been there too, where I'm like, okay, I'll be happy when I get this contract, I'll be happy when I move into a different apartment, I'll be happy. And it's just, it's exhausting to keep going to the next thing and not actually sit with the moment of like being content, but like more so being happy with what it is that you value. I love like that you have that digital detox in your book.
Well, I think, you know, we compare ourselves to the best versions of every aspect in our lives. So for our fitness goals, we compare ourselves to like a fitness blogger who only does that. For if we're mom, you know, we compare ourselves to like some mom who homeschools her kids and bakes bread and then we feel like a failure. For business, we compare ourselves to like some business phenom in charge of, you know, multi-billion dollar company. And that's just not realistic because your set of circumstances are not theirs and you don't have the same responsibilities as they do and vice versa. And sometimes, you know, balance doesn't look the same for not only everybody, but not the same for you at different points in your life. I think it's holding yourself to whatever the definition is. And that 50-50 idea of like this bullshit lady justice holding two bowls of like work and life is the most ridiculous thing. You know, if you look at a girl in her 20s, like sitting at her desk all night working, like you automatically think that girl's unbalanced. No, like, I don't know, maybe she doesn't want to focus on anything else, like having a family or whatever. And that's like her choice. She, you know, being the ultimate feminist is not telling other women what to do. It's like, girl, you do you. And so, you know, if she holds herself accountable to like, I'm actually not going to be upset about the things I'm not focusing on right now. I'm focusing on like getting my career on and that's what I'm doing. And that's balance for me. So cool. Like, and don't feel bad about it. You know, I even, and I'm going on Ariana's show, Ariana Huffington's show. And, you know, she talks about like, and I said this before, like, you know, we have to sleep. Yeah. Yes, totally sleep. Absolutely. Like sleep. But here's the thing, like she wouldn't have been Ariana if she slept. And frankly, I wouldn't have been able to have this conversation with you, have written the book, have had the platform if I was balanced in my 20s. And so, you know, it looks different for us all the time. And when you get, you just decide what there is now and just know that you are there right now. And wherever you are, there you are. And so, you know, you can have all the things and have jets and go to fancy places and you're still there. You're still you. It's not going to change no matter what kind of apartment you live in, no matter what kind of car you drive. You know, in the last chapter or step of Becoming Superwoman, I quote Jim Carrey, which is like not my go-to kind of person to quote. And I quote a lot of folks and I have a lot of inspirational quotes. But he said something, and I'm going to paraphrase it, that really drove this point home to me. He said, I wish everybody could become rich and famous and have everything they ever thought they wanted. And then they'll realize that that's not the answer. And what I took away from that is that there is actually no external solution to an internal problem. It's one of the themes of Becoming Superwoman. And I constantly have to remind myself that no matter what shit you procure, no matter what job you have, like that trauma or whatever is going on with you is always going to be there until you confront it. And nothing like external, no material stuff, no dude, no job is going to fix any of that for you. Mm-hmm. No, you're going to be your own hero. You have to be your own hero. And that's the idea of becoming super space woman. It's just becoming a super person, being a super version of you, not some character who's like saving the world and doing all things to all people for all people and being everybody else's hero. Like, you have to, when I needed a hero the most at my darkest time, nobody was gonna swoop in and save me. No dude, no job, no anything. When I needed a hero most, I had to become one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when you talk about balance, it's almost like when I feel like more, I wouldn't even say, well, I guess this is going to sound like an oxymoron, but like, I feel most balanced when I'm like terribly out of balance. Like if I go hard for like 3 or 4 days and like just crush work and I get this stuff done and I feel so effing fantastic, I feel like so much more in alignment and balanced than I do if it's like everything is perfect. It's like a slow morning. I get up and like nothing rocks the boat. It's like when I go to bed and I put my head on the pillow and I'm so exhausted, I'm so much more fulfilled. Now, granted, you obviously, like, as an athlete, any athlete, they always have time for resting, but there's different seasons where you go out of balance and you come in, but it's not like, yeah. And to your point, it's like everybody has their own definition and what they want to do, but definitely to maintain balance all the time. Like, even if you're building a business and you have a full-time job, you're definitely, for that season of life, it's going to feel cool, like out of balance from the traditional sense. Is it worth it? 1000%. Like, you would probably rather be out of balance for that season of life to get to where you want to go, in order to be where you want to be. And just like you said with Arianna Huffington, she didn't sleep for a lot of her life and she wouldn't be the person that she is today without that. And so, yeah, I just love how you challenge the conventional wisdom. I want to talk about like two things that you had mentioned. One, like say yes to saying no. So putting the constraints in. And then you had also mentioned, like, you talk about this balance thing, like a Weight Watcher style. I'm really curious about that.
Sure. Which one do you want to start with?
Let's do Weight Watcher, the balance. And then let's talk about, like, you know, say no. And what is your process for those constraints?
So the Weight Watchers type program is how I created this journal companion, which is, you know, the backstory to that is I wanted journal companions to my other two books and I tried and couldn't get them. And so here I am now with actually what I think is going to be the most beneficial journal companion that gives you 10 points for the day. And, you know, because this 50-50 balance, you know, I come from like the finance world. And so if you think, I think a superwoman is going to have a lot of different things from a side hustle to her friends, to a new relationship, to a job, to like whatever it is that you're valuing at that time, including emotional wellness, which I define as a combination of emotional intelligence or EQ and mental wellness, equals emotional wellness. And I think that is the biggest asset or liability. You always have to have at least 1 point for that. Because I know when I had 0 points for that, it will demand all of your points if you have that for too long. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing is going to affect your career. You can go to all the networking things on the planet. You can listen to all the podcasts. You can read all the books. You can get your, you know, whatever degrees and certifications. If you are like in bed, can't get out of bed, if you are not good yourself, that's going to affect your career more than any of those other things. And so having 1 point is like mandatory, but that's the only mandatory thing that I would say. I give my examples of the, you know, 5 things that I have as my buckets. You can obviously change those, but if you just add a 0 at the end of those points at the end of the day, that's your percentage. I mean, if you like percentages or pie charts or like whatever visual does it for you. But, you know, if you're saying it's easy to say 50-50 and like try to make them equal, then when you add a whole bunch of other things to it, it's not like, you know, Amanda, today I'm going to put like 27% to my side hustle and 14.5% to like my bestie or, you know, whatever. So I say it's just like focus on what you're focusing on right now and today. And not every day is the same. And by the way, I also created a system to thoughtfully procrastinate. And
you know, I love it.
Idea of like just having a to-do list and checking stuff off like indiscriminately. And it feels super great and cathartic. And you're like, I'm going to check off like, you know, whatever, and dry cleaning and this and that. I actually have 2 lists. I have the to-do list and the have-done list. And that makes me actually feel much better. And also I connect the dots between what I have on my list and what my goals are. So they actually, the things that you do first are the things that get you toward your goals, are not just things that you do because they're there. You can, I think the idea, again, I challenge all of the things, but procrastination, and when we think that that's a bad thing, I think it's ridiculous. You know, being able to say, like, I'm putting what's not important off to tomorrow is one of the most powerful things you can do. And so I created this plan, which you look at morning and night, and the top things that, as you know, create happiness from a scientific perspective are gratitude and acts of kindness and, you know, whatever, sleep, meditation, exercise, all of these types of things. And journaling. And so I try to incorporate those things that I learned from all of the like gurus and experts and whatever that I learned and smush them into something that was practical every morning and every night and something that was, you know, easy because you can get it down. And when you do that, it doesn't feel as overwhelming when you're like, ah, I'm not balanced. It's like, wait a minute, you may actually be balanced. Just like look at it for a second and keep yourself accountable to what that is. You know, people will say to me on the personal finance space all the time, like, I blew my budget. I'm like, bitch, did you even have a budget? Like, what do you mean you blew your budget? Like, where's your budget? And so when people are like, I'm off balance, I'm like, really? What is your definition of balance? Like, maybe you're not off balance and you should chill and be nicer to yourself. And, you know, we talk to ourselves in such a terrible way all the time. I think, you know, the biggest enemy is between our ears. And, you know, we beat ourselves up, and I do all the time. Like, I have these stories that I tell myself. And I'm like, I'm going to be broke and homeless and alone and abandoned. And like, that's my go-to like track or MP3 in my head. And it's really about changing the dialogue that you have with yourself. Like, if you lost a deal, like you said earlier, which was how you defined, you know, being success or getting there or whatever, you know, would you talk to your best friend if she was like, I lost a deal? You'd be like, you fucking suck. You are the worst. I can't believe you did this. You should have done blah, blah, blah. Like, would you do that? Absolutely not.
But no.
All the time. So yeah. That's, I think, what also needs to change. Did I answer that? Should I move on to the next?
Yeah, no, I mean, that was perfect. And just to kind of like piggyback on it is, I think there's this, and I've definitely like, I'm starting to, well, I've learned and I for so long I was doing things thinking like it was a false productivity-ness. And I like kind of tying this in about like starting a business and things like that. It's very easy to get wrapped up in thinking that your social media, your branding, your website has to be done or has to be perfect. And in some instances, the type of business that you're starting, yes, it's important to have a website, but like if it's a service-based business, really the most important thing that you need to be spending time and energy on is marketing yourself and like gaining referrals with clients. But if you're spending your time doing the wrong things at the wrong time, then it's going to feel like you're spinning your wheels. Then it's going to be frustrating. Then it could potentially lead to burnout. Then it could potentially like, it's how do you know you're doing the right things at the right time and that you're actually producing work and doing things like you were saying that get you to your goals versus just doing something because it falsely feels like you're being productive. I like loved doing laundry because it made me feel like I was getting shit done. And now I'm like, okay, well, I just don't attach the same emotional excitement to doing laundry. Like, yeah, it feels good to like have that done, but it's no longer going to be during the working day just because I'm at home. It's going to be like on the weekends or during the weeknights. And so just being really like, take a moment, ask yourself, like, is what I'm doing getting me closer to my goals? So I love it. Yes. Now tell us about like some of the boundaries, because I know we're coming up here on time. So I want to make sure that you share that and then also share with my listeners where they can connect with you and then also grab your book, Becoming Superwoman.
Oh my gosh. So many things. Yeah. Okay. So first, saying no. So there's different ways to say no. I actually, you know, with my other books, as you know, I create a bunch of scripts and like role-playing stuff. For negotiation in the past, I did that because people, you know, are motivated to negotiate their salaries or their jobs or whatever, but like nobody actually tells us what to say when we do those things. And so I created a bunch of scripts for boundaries. Shonda Rhimes, the superwoman, says no is a complete sentence. And, you know, if it's not a hell yes, there's a, you know, there's a business adage, as you also probably know, like if it's not a hell yes, it's a no. So that means if it's a maybe, it's a no. And that also goes for dating, but I haven't figured that one out yet. So I think, you know, the idea of saying no is like, we often feel like we're letting somebody down, but actually by saying yes to something you can't do an awesome job with, like that you put your half-ass into, is actually letting the person down more. So unless you can put your full ass into something and you can do it, I think there are a lot of ways you can say no, even if it is to your boss. And there's some stuff that, you know, you obviously have to say yes to. I totally get that. You know, I'm in a position where I'm speaking from a place of a lot of luxury and privilege in that sense, because I look in the mirror and I am my own boss. But, you know, so I think that there are a lot of ways to set boundaries for yourself. It's something that we don't learn in school, again. And you can set boundaries for every aspect of your life, from your relationship to your friends to people at work, to clients, and all sorts of things. I think, you know, it's a much better way to go than staying breathless, like you were saying, just being busy for the sake of being busy. Like, I felt like I was constantly, I had my team in the past, like, schedule me down to, you know, the minute. And if I had a break, I was not happy. If I was not defying space-time continuum, it, like by taking red eyes and early morning flights, like I was not happy. And I felt like I needed to take all the meetings and talk to all the people. And actually in the end of the day, I was like, I'm not really accomplishing anything. I'm like going to a bunch of conferences, meeting a bunch of people, like having a bunch of meetings, but like, I don't actually have time, or I'm not thoughtfully following up with anybody. And so now even, I mean, there's 1,000 trillion conferences like that you can go to, but I think to myself, like, if I don't have time to create relationships with those people, like, there's no point in me going. And it's really about creating a network that's a strong network and not networking, which is a whole other podcast. So I think the basics for saying no are just, you know, not, you don't have to, like, there are nice ways to say no and to, you know, value yourself first. People are going to value your time, but only if you do so first. It's your most valuable asset.
So good. I love it. Well, let's go ahead and kind of, like, I was going to say pause, but we'll wrap it up, because I think that it's such a really good message to send home, and even a reminder for myself of, you know, if it's not a hell yes, it's a hell no. And it also, like, you know, and this could be another podcast episode about different ways to politely say no, where it's not. And I think where I have found myself when I knew that I needed to say, like, yeah, no, that's probably not going to work. I didn't, because I didn't know how to say no. So it's also learning and finding techniques and ways to say no with confidence in that as well. So anyway, I digress. Nicole, this has been absolutely amazing. Will you please share with my listeners where they can connect with you and find out more information about, like, your upcoming book and then all the other two books that you've written in the past as well?
Yes, all the places. Find me at Nicole Leppin. I think wherever social media is served.
Amazing.
Wherever you can find it, and, you know, NicoleLeppin.com. If you want specifics for this book, it's obviously wherever books are sold, for Becoming Super Space Woman, or BecomingSuperwomanBook.com.
Love it. Amazing. Well, thank you so much. And we'll go ahead and put everything in the show notes. So you guys listening, tuning in, you can just head on over to shedidithowaypodcast.com and grab all the show notes. But until next time, keep doing it your way. Thank you so much, Nicole. If you enjoyed today's podcast episode, you can head on over to shedidithowaypodcast.com, where you can access the entire vault of She Did It Her Way podcast episodes and more information all about how to make the ultimate leap from your 9-to-5. And if you enjoyed today's episode, I would be so grateful if you headed on over to iTunes and left a review letting me know what you love about the She Did It Her Way podcast. Until next time, keep doing it your way.